This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Welcome to the Clock In Talk, an Arsenal podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You can get me at Gunatez, and I am your host, as I am each and every fucking week. I got to give a shout out to our good people in France this week, because I've looked at your stats and I am blown away. And thank you to you good people in France, because we are actually number 7 on the iTunes charts on the football podcast in France. So thank you, you guys. I'm joined with by Tony. Tony, you can get you at Clock End Talk. How are you, buddy?
Clock End_Talk. Just for future reference, I'd like to be introduced as the world's best podcaster. Name. That would be great, because we have received tweets this week saying that I am the world's premier podcaster. But yeah, I'm good, thanks.
And don't even get me started. Hey, Schwinn, you're with us, mate. AFC Schwinn, you can get him at...
I'm good. I was going to sit in my dick as well, but I think Tony's done that for the three of us combined, so let's get on with it.
We're going to pump this out very quickly, so it won't be a usual two-hour podcast, because Tony's got places to be, I've got places to be, and Schwinn's just sitting on the lounge doing absolute nothing. So, okay, Burnley, Tony, thoughts on that lineup, mate, when it came out?
Yeah, I think maybe not starting Pepe was probably the only surprise. I mean, I probably thought he would start Chambers over Luiz, but it was a sort of bit of a 50-50 one. So I wouldn't have been amazed either way. The only one that's really surprised me was Nelson. And what surprised me more is that if it wasn't going to be Pepe, I would have thought Emery would have picked Mkhitaryan. I know Nelson was better last week, but Emery tends to favour experience, been there and done it. So that was a bit of a surprise. I'm not saying it was bad. It was just I was a bit surprised.
And Schwinn, your thoughts, buddy?
Similar. I think I expected Luiz to come in. I think that's what I said last week when we did the show. And similarly, I didn't quite expect Torreira to feature from the beginning. So on that account, I was correct. But yeah, Pepe, I'm guessing he's not going to start this coming weekend either against Liverpool if, you know, he still doesn't have more than, 30-40 minutes under his belt in a particular game. So it's interesting to see how we're going to proceed. Of course, we're going to talk about that. But coming into the game, I was quite happy with the lineup.
My only one, boys, Socrates over Chambers. I don't know, though. I think there's a few questions as well as to why. We might as well touch on that now if you want, Tony. That was my only shock.
Well, no, not for me. For me, it was always going to be Socrates plus one other, and it was either going to be Chambers or Luiz. And as I said, I probably expected Chambers. I believe that's what I said when we done our predicted lineups last week or whenever we done it. But I don't think it's a shock. If he feels that they're the two strongest and most experienced going forward, then obviously he had to bed them in at some point. Also, I think we touched on this before. Without Xhaka, there was no one that's really going to play the progressive, the more direct balls, the longer balls. And Luiz is great at that. So maybe if we saw Xhaka, we might not have seen Luiz and we might have seen Chambers. But I thought without Xhaka in the team, it probably was pretty nailed on that Luiz is going to play to try and get the ball forward quicker.
Okay. Schwinn, first 20 minutes, mate, and well, we've got a goal there as well, Lacazette in the 38th minute, mate.
Yeah, Lacazette did get a goal, and he did very, very well to get that goal. You know, showed great strength, and somehow just managed to slot it in. But I'm not quite sure if that was the story of the first 20 minutes. You know, Burnley came to play, They pressed high. They showed good energy in the beginning of the game, and that's sort of what cost them, I think, towards the end. But it was a bit nervy, you know. We tried to play out from the back. I should say that we have become better at it. It's still not great, but we have become much better at it. And, you know, there are moments when we lose the ball, we're quick to react. Ceballos, in particular, was very quick to react every time he lost the ball throughout the game. And, you know, that energy in midfield helped. At the same time, we had, you know, players like David Luiz who were sort of playing with fire and, you know, playing passes right across the face of the goal, which just needed a touch to be finished. But, you know, it showed that the team was calm and was willing to play the way Emery has you know, spent most of last season and, of course, this preseason. There were instances where, you know, I feared that we might concede. Burnley was quick to hop onto those second chances, and it seemed like there was a player always free on the far post for them. But we did well not to concede, and as you said, Taz, Lacazette did very well to get us that quick lead.
Tony, going from there, from about the 20th minute to the end of the first half, look, take us through that whole first half, if you like, and then leading up to Ashley Barnes managing to get a goal against us.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like we were on the front foot. I've seen a lot of people moaning about our playing out from the back, and I thought it was okay yesterday. I don't think there's any real issues. We didn't really get caught stupidly. We may have lost a ball in and around the halfway line, but that's two or three passes further on. I thought yesterday it probably worked better than it has done a lot of times, and that the Guendouzi chance where he shot low and Pope saved it came from playing out from the back and playing in tight spaces. Yes, it was nervy, and you thought if they lose the ball, we're here, we're in trouble. But then I guess you have to back, these guys are top players, and you have to back them to not lose the ball in them situations. Otherwise, you just they'll never take the ball anywhere if you think they're going to lose it at all times. Burnley, I thought Burnley played quite well. I mean, there's been a lot of criticism of them, especially after Dyche came out after the game and moaned about diving, and they did play a lot of long balls. But that's what you're going to get from Burnley. They're always going to make you battle. They're going to be in your face. They're going to give you a game. They're not going to just sit there and let you have 90% of possession without putting in tackles. So it was the game was pretty much as expected. Their goal, for me, was a bit unlucky. Obviously, the ball deflected straight to Barnes. I've seen people blaming various people, Socrates, Luiz, Ceballos. But for me, it's just purely unlucky. Ceballos has showed McNeil onto inside because he's completely one-footed. Maybe let him go a bit too easy, but nothing drastic. Then the shot's taken a huge deflection. There's no way that Luiz could possibly pick up on that. And it's fallen right to Ashley Barnes. I think it's a bit unlucky, but I can't say it wasn't coming. They were in the game. I don't think, I was saying to Schwinn last night, I don't think they made many chances, but they were always in the game.
I'm not hanging him out to dry because I did mention it in the WhatsApp group with Socrates. And look, my only problem was, is you know how they run, you know, well, you see him run and he tries. I hate how they turn their back and try and do the intercept thing. I'm not blaming him, but I would prefer a defender to come in and tackle hard. If you miss it, if you miss the ball, you miss it, and so be it. But that was probably my only little gripe. I'm not hanging him out to dry or anything, but I just like my defenders to tackle hard and yeah, that's, I hate it. You know, he turned his back and the deflection then come onto him and then it went over to Barnes. Yeah, that, like I said, that's only my only gripe.
I can't see any fault, personally. He got the block in. He went to block the ball.
He
has no control over where it goes. Like, if you're expecting a player to block it and then it go pinpoint to someone, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I just prefer to block full tackle, that's all, yeah. I just prefer him run up.
It wasn't in tackling distance. It wasn't like McNeil was right in front of him. Otherwise, the deflection wouldn't have gone there. I don't know what more he could have done. For me, there's no blame at all. I don't blame anyone. I think it's just one of them things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to half time. Obviously, 1-1 up. Thoughts then, Schwinn, because Nelson went off and then Pepe came on.
He did. I mean, just before we went into for halftime, Nelson, of course, had that opportunity that was correctly ruled offside. And I think that was probably his brightest moment during the game. He, of course, contributed very well to playing out from the back and was tidy yesterday. But when you look at the final third, I don't think he was very effective. So the substitution made sense. And of course, this was the first, you know, proper glimpse we got to see of Pepe. 45 minutes, got to see combination plays, got to see him defend when we didn't have the ball, or whatever little defending he did. Bright debut, you know, like not debut, but bright appearance, I'd say. Enjoyed watching him, got to see his tendencies. He's not afraid to take players on, something we've lacked for a long time. Very happy to hugging, you know, and hugging the touch line, happy to come inside and spray the ball wide. And of course, some of combination plays that we saw him undertake. Also very, very good on the half turn. You know, we've all seen that one GIF going around on the internet that just saw him, you know, just completely leave two players in the dust. So Bright should have done better in slotting in Aubameyang at the very end when there was a 2-on-1. I think he just left it, you know, a bit too weak at the very end. But I enjoyed watching him, and I'm interested to see whether he's going to start next weekend.
Who was it that he made look like a complete fool again?
Tarkowski, was it? Oh, no, Ben Mee.
Yeah, it wasn't that good. The glimpses of that, it's good to see. You know, I know he's not fully fit, and I've seen the one or two people saying us, and not Arsenal fans, more so Tottenham fans and whatnot, saying that, look, 75 million for a bloke who, what did he do? But, mate, they're just fucking moaning cunts as far as I'm concerned, because I liked what I've seen. There was glimpses of brilliance there, and I think we're in for a good season out of him, boys.
I thought he was very bright. I think Aubameyang should have scored the chance that Pepe put him in for, not the one Trin's talking about, Also, the ball to Aubameyang was a bit short, but Aubameyang should have done a hell of a lot better. He was trying to look to give it back. There was a few instances yesterday where they was just trying to look to get Pepe in.
Just that rather too than much do move, eh?
Better for the team. Like, if Aubameyang, the ball was under here, I'm not saying it was perfect, but if Aubameyang just takes that and runs straight towards goal, no one catches him and he gets in and should score. He'd have been 1-on-1. But he was almost looking for the return ball before he got the ball, which slowed him down, and then the pass was under here. So it was like they were slowing themselves down in two ways. As I said, it could have been better. On the nutmeg on Ben Mee, it was class, but I preferred, and I've not seen a gif of it, I've seen the replays, he played a little flick around the corner, and it led to, I think, Torreira's chance where Pope made a worldie. But it was like, it was better interplay, whereas the Ben Mee one was all like self-brilliance. But I think he played a little flick around the corner to Maitland-Niles, Willock, who then beat the defender and cut it back, and Torreira had a shot. But he had a nice few little glimpses. He did try a little Cruyff flick when he first came on, and he completely missed the ball under pressure and stuff like that's a little bit annoying. Ceballos done the exact same last week, but they both seem to have learned from that you can't take liberties in this league.
Aubameyang gets a goal, Tony, 64th minute, assisted by the man, Ceballos.
Man of the moment, Danny Ceballos. Look, he won the ball. He lost the ball originally. And what you look for when, especially that type of player that's come from Spain and is pretty flary, what you look for when they lose the ball is, are they interested in getting it back? Not can they, because they're not obviously be able to win every tackle, but are they actually interested to go and hunt for it? And he did, and he won it back. Aubameyang, obviously, for me, is horrendous defending. It's a great finish and a great run by Aubameyang. I'm not taking anything away from him at all. But if one of our defenders done that, I'd be fucking fuming. Tarkowski's so scared of the pace outside, he's just showing him inside. Like, oh, go on then, go inside on your stronger foot. And then it's kind of giving Pope no chance, because Aubameyang's able to either bend it top corner in the other side or go to bottom corner he did on that side. Aubameyang's done really well. Great finish, great run. He's done well to get inside, but Tarkowski gave that to him. But thank you. I'll take it every day of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Schwinn, look, there's a couple of substitutions. I thought towards that last, I don't want to put a negative spin on it because, look, we got the 3 points, but the Aubameyang goal, probably Torreira came on, Ceballos went off. Did you boys think that last maybe 10 minutes we just felt like we're lacking a bit of fitness, or they were really coming home strong?
Not really. I mean, for me, I think it was Emery trying to almost, you know, look ahead to Liverpool. I think he was you know, sort of confident that this game is done and we won't concede. And I think that sort of goes down to Luiz and Sócrates, who I think were very, very effective on the day. And I think that's the reason that Emery tried this back three, hence taking Ceballos off, you know, at some point putting Kolasinac on too. And I think that's an indication of what he might try or start with against Liverpool and Tottenham. So I don't necessarily pay a lot of attention to, you know, in terms of whether it was, you know, energy falling. I think we just had a couple more bodies stationed forward, a low block defense sort of emptied the midfield to an extent. And that's when Torreira was brought in, because Emery, I think, noticed that the midfield was very empty. So he added that one player in the center of the park. But I liked what Emery did with those subs. You know, it's you can see the train of thought now as opposed to last season. And there's a proper pattern. He's easing players back into the fray. We saw that with Kolasinac. We've seen that with Pepe over the past 2 weeks. And there's definite, you know, a pattern in what he's following there for me.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of yellow cards, Tony. Aubameyang, that was the one. He wasn't 10 metres back on a free kick. I'm pretty sure yellow card at 38th.
That was Mike Dean trying to be the star of the show again. He can't blow the whistle and then when the ball's kicked. It's not like Aubameyang was standing on the ball. That's just, I said this to my friends before the game, that one of the issues with VAR is you're going to get refs like Mike Dean who can't be the centre of attention when the ball's in the area anymore, because they're going to get overruled and it's going to get looked at. So now they're just doing it outside the area where they can be the star of the show. But both ways, I'm not saying Mike Dean was biased, but he gave free kicks both ways and yellow cards that were just never in a million. They were just stupid, but it's like, oh, look, it's all about me again. I mean, there was one on McNeil in the first half. It was right in front of me where he ran down the wing. There was no foul there. He didn't complain himself. Ended up like running towards the corner flag with nowhere really to go. Got boxed in. And Mike Dean's brought it back. But when he blew the whistle, even McNeil was a bit like, what? Like, I'm running down the wing. Not that he wanted the advantage. He thought that he'd given a foul against him. Like, he didn't know what was going on. But again, that's how Mike Dean and certain other refs are going to deal with things now.
Mm-hmm. David Luiz, he had won the 90th, you know, extra time.
Yeah, he kicked the ball away.
Is that what it was? Oh, stupid. And then Ashley Barnes got one right on the whistle. So.
Yeah, arguing.
Yeah. Okay, so give us your 3-2-1, Tony. We'll start with the three.
There's been no surprise in saying Danny Ceballos.
Yep, and well, give us your thoughts on him for the day while we're there.
He was unbelievable. I mean, it's the type of player you just love to watch. He gets you out of your seat with almost every touch. But there was a lot of things beyond that. Look, we all knew he had footballing ability, but the stuff I touched on earlier, where is he willing to try and win the ball back after he loses it? Is he willing to do the hard, gritty stuff? What's he going to be like when he gets kicked? Is he going to shy away? And all of that stuff he passed with flying colours yesterday. And then obviously the celebration after the second goal, like showing that he cares, and that should be a bare minimum, but it's not in football. So stuff like that. And I'm not saying that means he loves the club and he's going to be here forever and get it tattooed on his face. But just that want to win, be it for us or whoever he's playing for, is something that was nice to see. What was also good to see is quite early on in the first half, he got fouled, and it was a foul and the ref gave it, but it was nothing bad. And he stayed down, sort of rolling around for a bit. And I can't remember if it was Luiz or Sócrates picked him up, like straight away. They didn't even entertain that he might be injured. Picked him up and they must have said to him, look, you've got a free kick, get the fuck up. Like, and after that, every other time he got fouled, he didn't stay down rolling around. And it's good, like it shows that he's able to learn quickly. You might disagree with him staying down early on, but once someone's told him, look, the ref's not going to do anymore. You're not going to get a booking because you stayed down for 5 minutes. So just get up and get on with the game. And stuff like that was nice to see. I thought it was a really complete performance. The only, I guess I've got two, I'm not even saying they're negatives, but two slight issues. First one is, if we've all got to remember, Mkhitaryan's home debut was absolutely sensational as well. So I'm not going to start writing Danny Ceballos as World Player of the Year just yet. And the second one may be controversial. I ain't giving him the assist for the first goal. I'm not having two assists yesterday. And look, nothing, that doesn't make his performance any worse. But when you put a corner in, which isn't the best, and it bounces around off a few players, and then Lacazette does unreal to turn and score while being fouled, I think, for me, that devalues assist stats when stuff like that counts. And I know on official records it'll count, but You know, I mean, there's levels of assistant for me. That
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I was going to ask you boys about that, what you thought of that. So I'm glad you mentioned it. Who am I up to? Schwinn, you're three, mate?
Yeah, got to be Danny Ceballos. I mean, on the day, most touches, most passes in the opposition half, most chances created, most recoveries, most fouls won, most assists, most duels won, and on par, you know, for most tackles and most take-ons and most shots. So you can see that he was everywhere. You know, he was involved. He showed himself to teammates. You know, a consequence of playing out from the back means that you always need to have a teammate around you. And I think more often than not, it was him who was showing himself as an option. You know, he's so tidy to get out of tight situations, which can be a real asset, you know, in this style of play. And we saw that yesterday. He's also very clever the way he plays the ball. You know, we often see either a ball is played to feet, or you thread a through pass in behind the last line of defense, so that, you know, a quick player can get onto it. But what I noticed is Ceballos plays these through balls in midfield. You know, just, and they're often just horizontal. They're not vertical passes that are forward looking, but it takes the pressure off and it allows a player to get on it in stride. And when you have players like Maitland-Niles, Willock, who like to move and progress with the ball, it can really open up, you know, spaces for them to even advance 5 yards, have a quick 1-2 and keep going. So very, very integral yesterday, especially in the first half. I thought he was incredible. Our best player by a mile. And I think these numbers sort of just underline all that.
No, totally agree, boys. I'm going with the three there. You'd be mad not to. Just one thing. Look, everything you boys have said is obviously the reason. One thing that nobody did mention is that when Aubameyang scored, the Ceballos, he was fucking pumped. And I like to see a bloke who's here on loan run over to the corner post. I would imagine what it was like at the ground, Tony. But you could see the hype in the bloke, you know, he's like, fucking yeah, cunts, like, I've got, you know, like, and I just love to see that from a player. It was really good, so, with him celebrating the Aubameyang goal. Your two, Tony?
I'm finding two and one quite difficult, because Ceballos was so head and shoulders above everyone else. You kind of, that's what you take away from the game. You just think, oh, Ceballos, Ceballos, Ceballos.
It's hard.
yeah, I mean, look, after I don't want to say hammering him last week, but after I didn't rate him anywhere near as highly as everyone else last week, I thought Guendouzi had a really good game yesterday. I think when you're playing with someone like Ceballos, someone has to do the other job, and Guendouzi's energy showed, and he just kept the ball ticking over. I think the only stat that, from what I've heard, that Ceballos didn't win was pass completion, and Guendouzi won it, which is the perfect foil for the way Ceballos played. So I'm going to give it to Guendouzi, but I wouldn't. There's so many players that you couldn't argue just because Ceballos was head and shoulders above everyone else. So anyone else on the pitch, I don't think there's many arguments.
Yeah, no worries.
I think we're going to be split on these, the two and ones.
Schwinn?
I don't want to disagree because it's Guendouzi and he did really have a very good game. But for me, it's David Luiz. You know, comes into the team, slots in right away. You couldn't really tell that this is his first proper start for a new club. You know, he formed a partnership with Socrates. There were moments when both of them would close down Ashley Barnes, and there was sufficient communication for them to come out of it, looking neat and tidy. Played some good passes over the top. Aubameyang and Lacazette were constantly making those runs when Luiz had the ball at his feet. And of course, there were a couple of situations where, you know, he showed his bastardry, something that, you know, we missed recently and you only had with Socrates. So it's good to have two center backs who, you know, can have that side to them. And when you're playing a team like Burnley, which is obviously very physical, aggressive, they like to put a foot in, you need players like them who can, you know, sort of reciprocate that. And I thought Luiz did very well to wear the shirt for the first time and just make it his own.
Yeah, no, he gets my two as well, mate, and they're very similar reasons. And, you know, I love that little lop ball he put over to Aubameyang. And it just, I know it was little glimpses of things too, but that's what he does best. But not only that, you could see him on corners and that. And I don't want to put the knives out for Mustafi, but you don't see a Mustafi screaming at the players, get into position, get in, you know, and really fucking passionate about that defence. And I just felt that, look, I could be wrong, but I felt like a leader was back on, like was back in our defence again. I know we've probably seen it in the past over the years, but I just felt that we've been lacking that real leadership in the defending line. And for me, he gets my two for that. Oh, well, and for his performance as well. So, yeah.
Can I just quickly add? I think him being there, as you said, Tez, in that leadership position, sort of marshaling the defense, sort of also, you know, unlocked, for a lack of a better term, Socrates. I thought Socrates was a bit more free in the way he was pressing. You know, of course, he plays left center back more often than not, but with Luis in the team, Socrates switched to the right part, and he was the aggressor yesterday. And I thought he did very well, you know, just sort of freeing himself because he didn't have a Mustafi to look after, that he was a bit more incisive, a bit more aggressive with his touches, with his tackles. And I think that sort of brought the best out of, or brought a bit better out of Socrates as well.
Yeah, you're probably right there, mate, to be honest. Because, like, it was just great to see that we've actually got somebody there who's marching, you know, who's organising stuff. And we've got this, you know, young Tierney. I don't know if Mafropanos gets a start. And, you know, we've got a young back line apart from Socrates. So, you know, David Luiz, he's going to be a very good asset to have in the team. So, Tony, give us your one.
I was torn between David Luiz and Aubameyang. I think had Aubameyang played either left or centrally in the first half, I would have probably given it to him. But he was pretty anonymous on the right in the first half. Don't overly blame him for it because we know he's not very good on the right. Whereas Luiz, for all the reasons you sort of just mentioned, was involved in the whole game. So I'll go him. But as I said, I think I probably would have given it to Aubameyang if he'd have been in his natural position or either of the two natural positions in the first half. But because he wasn't, he only impacted half the game and Luiz impacted it all.
Okay.
So, yeah, Luiz.
Schwinn, give us your one.
I'm going to give to Guendouzi for everything that Tony mentioned earlier. I think those are good reasons for him to be number one. Well, get 1 point, I suppose.
Yep. I've got a hate copying you, Kent. I really do. I feel like I'm sitting here copying you. But, you know, I rattled off, tried to not copy Tony last week and give Leno a one, and I wish I didn't, yeah. Leno was pretty good, though, but I often look at the bloke in goals and think, does he deserve one? I'll go Guendouzi just because he was pretty good. You can't deny that. And it was good to see that, you know, it's the first time he's played alongside Smallis as well, and he just seemed, you know, it was natural. Like, a young bloke, and he wasn't panicking. He just cruised along and did everything right. He did nothing wrong. So, okay, boys, anything else you want to add on that game, Tony? Or get in some questions?
I mean, the only thing I would say is Lacazette still clearly isn't match fit, and hopefully the whatever he got, 65, 70, is enough to get him up to match speed. He done unreal for the goal, but I felt we kind of carried him yesterday. But if that's what it needs to get him up to full fitness, then you've got to say it's brilliant management. But we can't, if he's only at that level again next week, I wouldn't start him at Anfield, and I know that's going to be controversial because it's Lacazette, but we can't carry players at Anfield. And hopefully he's back to full fitness and he's sharp and he's link-up players as good as it usually is. Just yesterday it was a bit off, but hopefully they were the minutes he needed.
And Schwinn, any last words, mate?
Yeah, I mean, for one, I was going to bring that up myself, so that's very well put by Tony. Just quickly, I'll add that, of course, Josh Kroenke was at the stadium yesterday, something that I think we should just mention because I don't think there's a question on that. And we also saw, you know, photographs during the rounds on Twitter that showed Raul and Edu sort of, you know, being outside the ground and interacting with fans, which I thought was a nice touch, something I thought is worth at least a mention.
Okay, sit tight, good people. We'll be back straight after this little ad.
In 1957, Laika became the first animal to orbit Earth. What kind of animal was Laika?
What is the only team in the Big Four North American sports leagues which shares its name with one of the Avengers?
And here's one more question for you. Are you the type of person who enjoys playing trivia games, learning new things, and having a bit of fun along the way?
If you are, or if you just want to find out the answers to those other questions, then our podcast, Quiz and Hers, might be right up your alley.
Each week, one of us writes new trivia questions for the other person, covering everything from science to history to pop culture to sports.
And every question in a game relates to some theme, like Game of Thrones,
internet memes,
sandwiches,
or animals in space.
Some of the themes make more sense than others.
So if you like trivia, learning, or real couples testing each other's knowledge and patience, check out our podcast, Quiz and Hers, part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network.
Quiz and Hers, the trivia podcast where we test each other's knowledge and the strength of our relationship.
Fuse, Tony, I don't feel like we play out from the back. We just keep playing at the back for most of the time until Burnley press us in our box. How can Burnley have more shots than us by the end of the first half at the Emirates?
I mean, I think it's very unfair to say we don't play out from the back. I think the majority of people would moan that we do it too much, so I can't really comment on that. In terms of them having first shots or more shots, I mean, I'm going to assume he's right. I've not looked at it. They definitely didn't have more chances. And also, I think the first half was a bit of a mess because, as I said, Aubameyang is completely wasted on the right. Nelson is playing way too safe. You look at Willock and he's taking chances. He's bursting at people. He's trying to outstrength people. And it's like he's taking his chance, whereas it feels like Nelson is doing nothing wrong, but it feels like he's more scared of losing his place. So he just does everything like 7 out of 10. He plays the safe pass. He takes people on. Like when he had that shot, it was really safe to take the guy on. He was never going to lose that ball going onto his left foot. And that's what the first half was. We had Lacazette who wasn't sharp. We had Aubameyang, who's useless on the right, and Nelson, who was just way too safe. Ceballos was started as a 10, but dropped a lot deeper. So we just didn't make anything in the first half. And I think for me, I know Schwinn said earlier he doesn't think Pepe starts at Anfield. For me, he has to, because the alternative is Nelson, who's just way too timid at the moment. And I know he's not usually like that, but I don't know if he's just trying to prove himself that he can be, they can rely on him, he's responsible. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't make for great viewing and great chance creation.
I agree. I think Pepe has to start against Liverpool. You know, we didn't buy this player $75 million or $80 million, whatever it cost, for him to sit on the bench. So I think, you know, top six team, we've got to play him against Liverpool. Siddhartha goes on, we only play when we need a goal. Look, you just butt in when you want, Tony. We only play when we need a goal. Then we do our usual thing of playing in our own half. It's so tedious and boring to watch after the kind of signings we've made this summer. Some of the attacking players, I'm happy we won't, but I still have no clue what exactly Emery Ball is. He goes on and says, I feel like we're riding our luck by the calibre of strikers we have. If we can't carve out Burnley at home, what hope do we have of the rest of the season? Or is it just me who's feeling this way? Thoughts?
I mean, for me, like, people are acting like, I know Burnley don't really finish high in the league, but they're not shit. There was a stat before the game yesterday that the only team that Dyche hasn't taken points off since Burnley have been in the Premier League is us. We're the only team that have beat them on every occasion. So it's not that he's saying, oh, if we can't even pump Burnley at home or carve them apart. No one does. Like, or they might do it on a one-off, but it's not regular. We created a lot of, even if they didn't end up in shots, and this is, I don't really want to get into XG, but this is my argument with XG model. Like, you can't say that Aubameyang and Pepe won, where Pepe underhill it and Aubameyang didn't stride onto it. That, for me, is a great chance, but it won't feature in any highlights package or anything because it ended up just being cut out on the edge of the box. But we created chances. Aubameyang had the one where Pepe put him in, where he got the shot off. Torreira had one, which for me was a world-class save by Pope. Ceballos had Pope made a really good save from him. I don't know what you expect. That's five, including the two goals. That's six good chances. And they're good chances, not just like, oh, maybe could score. They're six. If they all went in, you'd say, oh, I'm not surprised. So I don't know what you want. You want us to be making 10 clear and obvious chances every game? It's just not going to happen. It's Premier League football. I don't know what people are expecting. And look, this is coming from someone that really isn't an Emery fan. So it's not like I'm just defending it for the sake of because I love Emery. Everyone knows I'm not his biggest fan, but I think you've got to kind of give credit where it's due.
I just want to touch on, because I had this same argument with somebody the other day. I'm just trying to find it there. He said about our strikers. We're riding our luck by the calibre of strikers. I'm starting to get a bit of a feeling, and not from, once again, not from Arsenal fans. Look, I talk to a lot of fans. I talk to Spurs fans. I talk to Manchester United, Chelsea fans. They're just, you know, mates in Banner and whatnot. So, and they were actually saying very similar, like, you boys are fucking lucky you've got two of the really probably best strikers running around.
But it's not luck, is it?
I was just about to say, that was my argument. I think, like, is that really right? Like, if you actually watch football, what happens when them strikers don't get the fucking ball?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's like, no one says Barcelona are lucky to have Messi, like, or lucky to have when they had Xavi and Iniesta. That's the thing, you pay these money for these good players, and then they're expected to do good things. It's kind of how football works. In normal life, it's like when you buy a house and someone goes, oh, you're lucky to be on the property ladder. No, I'm not. I worked hard, made money, and I spent it. Like, and it's the same in football. Arsenal have generated this money, however they've done it, and they've spent it on good footballers, and everyone's shocked that they're doing good things. Like, why is it lucky that Aubameyang is doing what he's always done? Like, we signed him for that, and now he's doing it at us, but now somehow it's lucky.
Yeah,
I really get that. Like, good players do good things. That is football in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, I agree. MAA Gunner says, Schwinn, do you think if Wenger gave in to having a transfer team director of football, etc., a lot earlier, it wouldn't have ended as bad as it did?
I mean, it's really difficult to say one way or the other definitively. I think what I will leave you guys with is that every manager, every executive has their own way of operating. And when they've operated a certain way for, you know, 20 or so or 15 or so years, it's harder for them to evolve. I mean, to Wenger's credit, he's been someone who's been very open to change and has almost, you know, brought about revolution in a lot of ways. But we know this was a sticking point for him. For what reason? I'm not quite sure. Maybe he knew that he was going to struggle in an environment that sort of diluted his power. At least that's what I would like to believe, because we know how much he cared for the club, you know, and I don't think that, you know, that's ever going to be questioned. So I wouldn't necessarily say that, yes, it would have been a success and his departure would have been softer, just because I think that everyone has their own styles of managing and operating. And, you know, in the absence of that enhanced responsibility, maybe Arsene would have struggled.
Okay, Tony, this has been flapping around last night or early this morning for me on Twitter after the game. There's been a lot of comments about it. There was people sharing links, you know, obviously the Van Persie interview that he had on football on BT Sports. I thought this may come up in the podcast. Look, you can find the video, guys, that Tony did 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, so the story's a lot older, but obviously only going clock in. 2 years ago,
Yeah. So you could find the YouTube story on our YouTube account. Give us a subscribe too, as well. So we're there on the YouTube. But Tony's got some great little stories there as well. It's a playlist just called Short Stories, so you can actually have a listen to a few of them stories. Tony, the question is, what do you make of Van Persie's comments?
I mean, us three had a discussion about this last night, and look, Van Persie's now got a role in the English media. He's probably going to be covering a lot of games. BT have always been accused of having an anti-Arsenal bias, so I think they're trying to pull it that Van Persie's on the Arsenal side of things. So this narrative has all come about that everything I said 2 years ago, and which I did get untold amount of shit for at the time, has pretty much proved to be right. It's not that they didn't offer him a contract, but if I, like, for example, just put it in context of this podcast, if I said to you, I want £100,000 a week or I'm not coming on the show anymore, and you said, well, we can't do that, so there's no, okay, bye, then I can say, oh, well, they didn't want me anymore. That's basically how it's come about. Like, he's made a load of demands that Arsenal basically said no to, and then he's saying, oh, well, they didn't offer me anything. Well, if I know I can't meet your demands, why am I going to waste my time? Like, He's using a small technicality to make himself look like the good guy. Even, and as I said, there was an offer on the table before the meeting. And then after, as we know, he demanded certain things, and they're like, look, we can't cater to that. See you later, mate, basically. But for me, it's a load of shit. But as you said last night, people that are anti-Wenger, Gazidis, or whoever will want to believe it, so they will. And no amount of fact is going to get in the way of that. I mean, and then you've got holograms like you who are catering to it for some apparent reason, which I'm not really sure of. But yeah, it's just silly.
I honestly don't know why I really give two fucks.
That is also a bad point, but people still want to blame.
I know, I got caught up in the moment this morning. I was like, fuck, look at this shit. I woke up and done, I went, I don't really care.
Well, no, that is the main point. No one should really care, but you now have, as I said, like, we've seen people on Twitter that they always hated, well, not always hated Wenger, but hated Wenger for the last 5 or 6 years of his tenure, or including these 2 years, and they're now like, oh, look, see, Wenger done this, and it's like, give it a rest, the bloke's gone, just get over it. No amount of either someone loving Wenger or someone hating Wenger is going to change anything, so just fucking get over it.
I've seen a couple of the boys talk. Look, I won't go drag this on too long. I've seen a couple of the boys, Island Boy Gurner, and I think it was Addy discussing in the WhatsApp group, you know, like Addy made a pretty good point, to be honest, that, you know, if he had stayed and not signed a contract, and let's say...
Sorry, I know you bring this up last night and I didn't reply because I was bored of the whole story, but that was never an option. Okay. I don't know.
Let's put it in context for the listeners first. And then I'll get you to... So what basically the boys were talking about is his contract runs up at the end of the season. If he has a good season, what's to stop him if Barcelona say, hey, come over to us, he walks away for free?
No, but what I'm saying is that Addy's whole argument was based on you can't keep him for a year without a contract and let him go for free. That was never an option. The options were he signs on Arsenal's terms or he goes. And he went because... He wanted a deal on his own terms, which is never going to happen.
Okay, so yeah,
I partially listened to Addy's argument because there was about 10 voice notes that totaled about 25 minutes and I was tired, so I didn't listen to them. Not all of them. But from what I gather, his argument was based on a circumstance that didn't ever exist and was never possible. Okay. So you saying, he could go to Barcelona for free in the next summer. He was never, ever going to stay. Never an option,
yeah.
That he was going that summer or he was signing a long-term contract. They were the two options.
Yeah, right, okay. No, that makes sense, sir. Okay. Sandeep says, let's go Cosman Butter. Schwinn, do any of you miss Granit? I certainly did not.
It's a tough one. We certainly didn't miss him, but does that mean that if he was in the team, we would have been worse, equally good or better? That's really hard to say. I thought, you know, on the day our midfield was good, I think Willock was probably a weak link and he was still very good on the day, or, you know, as good as we can expect him to be at this point. But I think it'd be unfair to say that we missed Granit because the midfield sort of won that game for us. You know, we spoke about Danny and Guendouzi at length. And to then say that we missed Granit, I think would be a disservice to the midfield. So I don't think we missed him.
Look, my biggest point, when I've seen a lot of people talking about Granit yesterday and whatnot, my only point is can you play every single game with the team we've currently got that ran out on the field yesterday, throw Pepe in, I suppose. Can you play every single game, FA Cup, Europa League, Premier League, every game for the season with that team?
Of course not.
No, exactly. So will you miss Granit? You will. You will somewhere along the lines.
I mean, but the argument would be that if you put Granit in this team and you take any one of the midfielders out, could that team play every game?
No, exactly. Season? Yeah, we need depth. And I think I like we've got depth for the midfield. We're talking Granit, we're talking Guendouzi, we're talking Torreira, and Ceballos. We've got depth. And I like having depth like that going forward.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
I'll stick with you for a minute. Schwinn, Sandeep says Ashley Barnes and Sean Dyche are dickheads.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well.
I didn't see his press conference yesterday, but I heard a lot of people saying that he was having a good old fucking whinge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as Tony said, you know, when there's a team in the league that's sort of your bogey team and you can never get a number on them, not even pick up a point against them, whether home or away. Yeah, I mean, you will become anal and sort of single them out. I mean, if he's going to single out our players for quote-unquote diving, I didn't really see diving as such. I think our players were clever to get contact, you know, get themselves between the ball and the opponent and then fall in key situations. I'd say that's smart football. I'd argue that kicking players and shoving them and barging Torreira into Leno as Leno is collecting the ball is much more barbaric and uncultured. So I'd throw the question back at Sean Dyche and ask him to, you know, justify those sort of antics as opposed to clever football.
Yeah, that's right. He fucking always has a winch. Josh.
Brexit is the answer.
Sorry?
Brexit is the answer. Yeah, proper Brexit football team. To be fair, like Match of the Day actually summed that up brilliantly yesterday, where they said, look, it is a problem in modern football. We all know that. But there was no cases of it yesterday, like, and it's probably just he came out after the game and needed something to say, and as Schwinn said, he's pissed off, he's lost again, so he's just used probably his thoughts on modern football and attached them to that game, even though they didn't really exist.
Mm-hmm. Josh says, definitely positive signs from the game, but I'm still concerned about how much space Burnley players had around the box. It seemed like we didn't know who was supposed to be stopping the crosses. Also, Pepe didn't look like he wanted to defend. Maybe fitness, Tony.
I didn't think anyone that played on the wing at any point really fancied defending. And you've also got to remember a large part of Pepe's time on the pitch, he was essentially up front in a 5-3-2 and floating. Not up front, but he was floating, so he didn't really have a defensive duty. But I don't think Nelson particularly done his defensive work. I don't think Aubameyang done his defensive work on either wing. And usually those players do. So whether it was an instruction that, look, and this is what I said at the start of the season, that or before the season started, that I thought we'd go 4-3-3 with the top three having little to no responsibility. I don't know if that's the case, but that's what it looked like yesterday, because you'd be very hard-pressed to say Nelson or Aubameyang done their defensive work. I thought in the first half, McNeil had the freedom of the left wing, and he had Aubameyang in front of him, who's known for doing his defensive work when he plays on the wing, and he just didn't. So I feel that's probably more instruction than Pepe just not fancying it.
Okay. We spoke about Sugar Daddy. Says, why do you think Chambers was dropped? We did touch on that earlier. MAA Gunner, do you think VAR is a... I mean, you spoke heavily about this morning, Tony. Do you think VAR is a good thing for Man City? Ever since it's been introduced, Man City fans finally have something to complain about.
It's like my mate that I go to pretty much every game with, we're on polar opposites. I don't mind it. I would rather the right decision be made as long as it's quick. He fucking hates everything to do with it. He wishes it didn't exist. My biggest problem now, and it's, I was led to believe that the decisions were going to be shown in the stadium. They're not. So you'd have had Man City fans last night going home and they won't even know why their goal was disallowed. So they in the ground, you're just told decision, no goal. They wouldn't know if someone was offside, if it was handball, which was actually given. Like, that's unacceptable. And I know, I said this to Tez last night, I know as a match-going fan, I'm in the very small minority, and most people are sitting at home watching it on TV, and they have absolutely no problem with it, because they see everything in real time, and whether they agree with the decision or not is a different story. But for the match-going fans, it's terrible, and I think, and again, people probably would be like, oh, but you get to go every week. I don't think it's right that the match-going fans are completely alienated from what's happening, that you then have to try and get on Twitter quickly while 60 other thousand people are trying to get on Twitter to see why the fuck you haven't just scored a winning goal in the 90th minute. So that's horrendous. But on the flip side of that, I said this last week, and I'll probably feel like I'm going to be saying this every week, that my problem is with the rules. VAR is just there to enforce the rules. I mean, that handball rule is an absolute nonsense, because never in football has it been one rule for one, apart from the keeper, which is the same on both teams. But now, depending on where you are on the pitch, there's different rules. That has never been the case. And I hate if football's going to go that way. I don't blame VAR, because VAR is just enforcing that rule. My issue is with the rule, and that's something I think is not going to change whether VAR's there or not. The only issue is, without VAR, you probably wouldn't spot them things. that doesn't make the rule right. Just because someone's missed it doesn't mean, oh, everything's now okay. So I really don't know what the solution is, but that rule is for me one of the worst things to happen to football in the last, I don't know how many years, 20, 25 years.
Yeah, and as me and you discussed last night, mate, that VAR, it's going to be one of them things this season. It's just going to be very controversial and people are going to complain about it, and it's just going to be one of them topics. So, you actually said to me that the media were having a bit of a, you know, they were having a bit of a shindig, and it's leading the headlines over there as well for those who aren't in the UK. So,
but again, just to reiterate, all of the talking around in the media is not so much around VAR; it's around that specific rule.
Yeah. Okay.
No one's really criticising VAR apart from that it's highlighting the rule. But again, that makes the rule the problem.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Schwinn had to leave us because he's got things to do, so we'll just mean you'll push on, mate. Why was Tony at Arsenal on media day?
I wanted to go. It was a couple of years ago. Well, it was the year we signed Lacazette, so.
Okay. It's a weird question. If you could combine two Arsenal players to make one, which two?
A few years ago, there would always be players would be like, oh, Giroud and Walcott, but now it doesn't really seem like there's anyone. I mean, I'd put Granit's passing range in someone quicker, probably.
Yeah, it's probably a good shout.
I mean, yeah, if you could give, say, Willock Xhaka's passing range, then there'd be pretty much nothing he couldn't do.
Mm. Yeah, he was good yesterday too. We didn't really talk about
him. Yeah, I think it was probably a bit unfair that we didn't really mention him, but he wasn't standout. As I said, he wasn't in the top one, two or three for any of us, but probably fourth. So it seemed a bit unfair that we didn't mention him. And it shows that now it's kind of the level we come to expect from him, because before you'd go, oh, he done really well for an 18, 19-year-old, but now it's like, even though it's only been a couple of games, we now just expect that from him.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's good. I know it's early, but in your opinion, what's our best midfield? Too early for me.
Yeah, I don't think there's such a thing. I think it's horses for courses. You can't tell me a team that's going to be on the back foot the whole time against, say, Liverpool away is going to have the same best midfield as you are when you're going to have 90% of the ball at home to Sheffield United or whoever. So I think it is all depends on the game.
Why should we play Ozil and Ceballos in the easier games, like how Santi was used with Wenger? Or should we? Should we play Ozil and Ceballos?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be something that'd be very interesting to see. I think it's something I would like to see given a chance. But then there's a lot of combinations I'd like to see. So,
it'll be one more so, I think. Definitely one more so. MAA Gunner, if it's true that we'll go for Upamecano in January, and we end up getting him, would you still be Kroenke out, or wouldn't you mind him staying since he sorted out the structure of the club?
I mean, I've never fully been on board with the Kroenke out bandwagon anyway. So,
nah, me either.
My stance with him was always, I'm not saying he's the best person on earth, but I don't really get all the Kroenke out, mainly because I thought it was pointless. I've said many times that if someone tells me that they don't like the way I decorated my house, that don't mean they can make me sell it, which is pretty much what Arsenal fans were asking for with Kroenke. But, yeah, I mean, I've never been out and out Kroenke out, to use the expression anyway.
No, my over. No point asking MAA Gunner, Wilshere, Ramsey, who's going to be captain, because none of them are at the club, mate. Halls of Marbles.
Jack Ron Ramshere.
Sorry?
Jack Ron Ramshere.
Is there any reason for the hard insistence on playing out from the back? Is Aubameyang growing into his wide form number 9 role now? His goal was reminiscent of Henry's strike in how he cut it back in.
Look, as I said, I thought Aubameyang was really good when he played on the left and then after when Lacazette went off when he played centrally. I thought he was terrible on the right. Not terrible, he just wasn't involved. I think a lot of the reason we play out from the back is, look, we're playing Burnley, who pretty much play four big players at the back. So anywhere across the back line, you're not really going to win any long balls. We had Lacazette, who's, 5'9", and wasn't fit. Aubameyang, who just doesn't really have much interest in winning headers versus centre-backs. So what do you gain by going long? They win the ball back and they head it, and then you have a fight in midfield. At least that the way playing short, we have some form of control. And again, I said this earlier, I think based on yesterday, playing out from the back is getting a hell of a lot of criticism. I don't think we really made any errors, nothing like, especially nothing huge. I don't know, the feeling I get, and I don't know if this is right, is that the commentators kept banging on about it. So it's worried people. Like, the commentators going, oh, Arsenal been a bit risky there. So then that's stuck in people's heads, and now people keep talking about it. Because the Saturday game, where I'm blessed with having no commentary, and I say blessed, I didn't really see any issue.
I was reading the bloody WhatsApp messages. I thought Maddie threw us a couple of questions there, that was all. Halls of Marbles talking about the BT Sports interview with Van Persie thing was interesting, but it's not the fact. He wanted the Leaf to win, which he did ultimately. It's what he said. Arsenal was a small stepping stone, and the little boy inside him was always a Man U fan. Trying to pin it on the club doesn't excuse that.
Spot on.
Vish says, can we find a more defensive minded, tough tackling, powerful clone version of Ceballos in January? Ceballos was immense yesterday. Can Arsenal make his loan permanent deal right now?
I will still maintain, and I don't think this will happen, but remember Mkhitaryan's first home game, where he was sensational.
Yeah, let's just... Look, I get the excitement. He was really good.
Oh, no, I tweeted last night, I love him. But just remember, keep it in our heads that it was one very, very impressive game, but Mkhitaryan's home debut, we won 5-1 and he got 3 assists. So let's just calm ourselves for a little bit.
Hack on Larson's got a couple of questions. What do you think is our best midfield, a 4-3-3 and in a 4-2-3-1 formation?
Similar to whoever asked the question earlier, I think it all completely depends on who we're playing.
MAA did ask earlier. Hack on, what do you think about our midfield three yesterday? From now, it's about to find the balance with the two players. Play Ceballos. Ceballos was immense and made everything tick in our midfield.
Yeah, I mean, look, yesterday the balance was very good. You had Guendouzi, who keeps the ball ticking over very well. You had Ceballos, who plays forward and gets himself out of tight spaces. And you had Willock, who is a bit of a sort of power runner, or as a runner, who's the box-to-box, who's the engine. So it worked pretty well. You have to find that balance. Yeah. Amongst the three, I said this last week, that amongst the three, you need a broad set of skills. And the problem with playing a two is, unless one of them players is incredible, it's very difficult because you're not going to get all of the bases covered that you need. It's not to say, look, Xhaka could probably come in and do, say, Guendouzi's role, but then you might need Torreira to do more of the defensive and then someone else to be more creative. As long as you find the balance amongst the three, that's the key point.
I'm just going to go into this other... My biggest problem yesterday with Ceballos, and Hakon just says now, did any of our players have a particular bad game? I be honest, I was watching him so much... I did notice the other players, but he was everywhere and just doing everything right. And I think I was so wow, look at this kid go. I wasn't really paying attention to who was having a bad game. And I don't think anybody did, but nobody stuck out to me like a sore thumb. If anything, it would be more... The only thing I was a bit pissed off about is the amount of space Burnley had with them long balls. But that's Burnley, and they're probably going to do that anyway. I don't know if that's how you stop that.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because the ball's going over your head. You can't mark the sky,
basically. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, what you were saying about him him stealing the show and him catching your eye, that's what I said when we was going on our 3-2-1s. It's like, I wouldn't have been surprised if we all obviously gave Ceballos 3 and then... we didn't in the end. We all went the same, but with different scores. But I wouldn't have been surprised if we went with six different players with our two and ones, because he was just that far ahead that it was almost like everyone else was kind of like just an also part in the Ceballos show.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally agree. Hakon says 6 points of six is a perfect start, particularly when we're missing players and have a lot of players coming back to fitness. Some brilliant football and some not so brilliant, but all that matters is those points. How many times does Dyche accused for diving? So it's pretty much every single game. Hakon says, what a fuckwit. MAA Gunner, to be honest, that game deserved to be a draw. Ooh, here we go. We allowed Burnley to have more chances than us and hardly created much ourselves. Only two pieces of individual brilliance got us out, which was the story of last season. Should we be worried?
I disagree with every single bit of that question.
Well, look, I do too. But somebody else up further asked something about, it was similar, you know, that was the first question we said. And there's a little glimpses of negativity coming in. Like Hakon said, we got 6 points out of two games, boys. And I see little bits of, unless you're just trying to ask a question and change topic, but I think it's a good start. I think in two games, like, players coming back.
Can have his 6 points. That's the most you can.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm not saying we played perfectly and we've been amazing, but we've not really completely clicked, and we've got 6 points. I agree. We could have created more chances in both games, but to say Burnley had more for me is ridiculous. Like I said to Schwinn last night, and he looked at the stats, and I can't even remember what he told me. But did they have a shot on target apart from the goal? I literally can't remember.
Yeah, they had a couple.
I can't remember making him a save. And when I say, again, anyone that listens regularly will know this, like my definition of a shot on target that I actually care about is one that the average bloke in the street wouldn't save. So if they've had four shots on target, one is the goal, and then they've had three that Leno's caught that he could have done with a cup of tea in his other hand. For me, like what chance? Like, I can name you Arsenal chances that we had. I can't name a single Burnley where they threatened the goal. Like you can actually go to Terreira, made a good save from Aubameyang. The Pepe incident we spoke about where he put Aubameyang through, but maybe not hard enough. Mm. And Aubameyang tried to look back for him. Like they're great chances and great moments. The Ceballos shot, Pope made a really good save. With them, what chances? If you're telling me they have now got seven chances as good as that.
Yeah, look, I haven't looked at the stats on how many shots they've had on target and stuff over. But I think there was a couple, and somebody may correct me, from corners and set pieces. And there was a couple, I'm sure there was a couple from set pieces on target and where Leno made a few saves. But you're right, there was nothing like a... like a flashy run, and like an Aubameyang and things like that.
It doesn't have to be flashy. A chance is a chance, but there's no way I could, from what I've seen, and I've seen the highlights as well, I could come out of that and go, geez, look at the chances Burnley had. Like, they had more than us. Never in a million years could I say that.
Well, according to the stats, they had 9 off, 5 on. And I wouldn't have thought it would be 5. On target. We had 9 shots on target.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, there's stuff like... stuff like Nelson's where... I mean, Pope's spilt it and done quite... I mean, it was poor to spill it. Mm. But that's obviously a shot on target. For me, that doesn't really count in what I class as it, because I think any normal man would save that. But as I said, my point goes, I can list off chances. Even watching the highlights last night, I watched Match of the Day last night, and I don't think they showed Leno make a save.
I think there was one late with McNeil. It was off a corner, something with Rodriguez. There's a couple like that.
They didn't show Leno make a save on
that show. Yeah, okay. No, fair enough. There was a couple, I thought there was anyway. Anyway... let's move on. Monreal with very good performance, says Hakon Larsson. Maitland-Niles was decent defending, but was very quiet going forward. Expect more from him playing at home against Burnley.
Okay. Again, I think this comes down to where they've, what I believe has happened, and this may be absolute bullshit. I'm not saying it's fact, but where I believe that they've told the front three, your attackers just attack, they've probably said to the defender, fullbacks, well, you kind of don't have to go forward as much anymore because these guys aren't chasing back with you. It's what's known as cheating. So you're cheating your defensive duties. And if the attackers are doing that, then the defenders don't need to bomb on as much. Like, even Monreal didn't. I know he nearly got an assist if he was onside, but he didn't get forward anywhere near as much as we used to see him from him. And I agree, Maitland-Niles didn't get as forward as much as we'd expect, but I think that's a change in approach. I don't think that's anything to do with the players.
Vish says, we were sitting deep at home, letting Burnley attack us. Insanity as a trial run for Liverpool next week. Can Emery use our performance to analyse how best to set up our midfield next week for the onslaught of their front three? Who would you sacrifice? Well, look, I watched their game against Southampton last night. That was on after...
Yeah.
And I know they played midweek during the week with that game against Chelsea, but I don't think they were that great, Liverpool, yesterday. I think they were let off very, very lucky.
Yeah, all three times I've seen them this season, so in all the three games they've played, they've been very, very open at the back. They've conceded in all of the games, which I think if you look at the amount of goals they conceded last season, it was much less than one a game. So to concede 1-2 and then 1 in the three consecutive games, I don't know what it is, whether they're not 100% clicked into gear yet or if they're just more open for another reason, but they don't look as hard to score against.
I'd rather play in like this, you know, this early too in the season, because and if you're a Southampton fan, and I know you all aren't because you're all Arsenal fans, but geez, you'd be fucking livid. I can't remember who the it wasn't Redmond.
Ings.
Yeah.
Danny.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, how did he miss that, mate? We'd be fucking ropeable if Lacazette or Aubameyang, you know, missed that. That was a fucking good chance. So, you know, could have levelled it up at 2-2, but I almost thought Southampton were unlucky not to steal the win, and more so Liverpool were lucky to get the win. Sushant says our defence still looks very shaky. Till Tierney, Bellerin returns. What can Emery do to improve the defence other than praying?
Well, look, you've got half the people moaning that the fullbacks didn't attack in the way that they would expect, and then other people saying, what can he do? I think that's what he has done, and I don't think we looked any... Look, I'm not saying we were perfect at the back, we obviously weren't, but I don't think we're anywhere near as shaky or as suspect as I've seen us at times last season or in the last few seasons. Again, I always say defence comes down to system, and I think that the system worked better yesterday defensively, in a defensive way. Did it tame our attack a little bit? Yeah, probably, but you can't have both. You can't be the most free-flowing attacking team in the world and then have a rock-solid defence. It just doesn't really work like that. So... I think we would probably look a bit tight. Nothing against Guendouzi. You heard me give him the second best player, our second best player. But if you want us to be a little bit tighter, you probably put Torreira. He was the deepest of the midfielders, and you probably put Torreira in there, who is more defensive minded, but then he doesn't use the ball as well. So you're taking with one hand your possession, but giving with the other hand more defensive stability. And it's just about finding that balance.
How do you rate Willock and Niles' performance? Guendouzi was superb yesterday too, Sushant says. We touched on Willock. We probably didn't speak much about him, but we did acknowledge that he was really good. Maitland-Niles, how do you think he went?
Well, look, I think Barnes is their most difficult player to play against, but their best player for me is Dwight McNeil. And he didn't really do anything. I know the goal obviously came from his deflected shot, but Maitland-Niles was tracking the runner, so that was nothing to do with Maitland-Niles. So I think you've kind of got to give Maitland-Niles credit. While it didn't look like he played amazing, if you've kept their best or most dangerous player out of the game, well done. Like, whether that's down to him or down to the rest of the team, I can't criticise him when their best player has not really made an impact. Or they're, you know what I mean? Whether he's their best or most dangerous, however you want to label it.
Yeah. Look, he's pretty good. Why is Aubameyang not appreciated by our fan base like Lacazette? And that is the million-dollar question that we've been asking for two seasons.
Yeah. Oh,
Hack on, quick, a couple of last quick questions.
Who asked that, by the way?
Sushant.
Oh, okay.
Hack on just said Guendouzi had a brilliant game as well, to be fair. Just running through, there was a couple of notifications, so I just thought I'd have a quick look. That's about it, mate. That's about us, done and dusted. Look, we've got a bolt, we've got a run. Tony's got to get somewhere. Schwinn's already gone, and I've also got a bolt, so I know it is a shorter podcast than usual.
Just very quickly, before Schwinn left, he done a Liverpool prediction of 2-2, and he said that he thinks we'll play a back three.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because we're not going to be on before then, are we? Shit, so I'll go to a prediction on the spot.
Go on then.
I don't know, really. I was thinking if Pepe starts, I would be tempted to be... I think it might be a high-scoring game, and that's because, you know, we're a bit leaky. I think they're a bit leaky. I'm going to go like a 3-2 to Arsenal. I know it's probably a bit of a stretch, but I'm thinking there'll be a few goals in this one. So, yeah, I'll go 3-2 Arsenal.
Back four or five?
Probably back four. I think, yeah. No, you'll go back five. It'll be back five.
I obviously, I'm not going to do a score prediction, but I think he'll go back four.
Back four? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, because he was testing things out during that game. So, yesterday. So, I don't know whether he's come out of that game and thought, you know, I don't know whether he's found the right ingredient too. Like, he was testing
this. I personally think that the back five did help because he was probably expecting them to win the flick-ons and then at least we've got the extra man. But also, with Lacazette had to come off, the options were Martinelli for 20 minutes against Burnley, which is never going to be a good idea, or Kolasinac, which then automatically kind of made it a back five. And it wasn't really... It was weird. Like, a few people... I went with for drinks with some friends after the game and we're saying it was a weird back five because it was like Kolasinac was still kind of playing as high up as Aubameyang was when he was on the left, but Monreal tucked in. So it's like we played three centre-backs and no left wing-back.
Yeah.
It was really weird. I'd love to see the average position to see if that is what actually happened, but that's what it looked like when we were there. I thought that, but I didn't really say anything. And then two of my friends who sat completely different places in the ground, one sat upper tier, another one sat behind the goal, and I'm sat on the halfway line. So our viewpoints are all completely different.
Mm.
All said the same thing, that it was really like it wasn't a formation.
Yeah, no, it was weird. It was hard to work out what he was doing as well. And I was watching on TV. I think the commentators at one stage said it was two at the top, two and a three at the back. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was definitely three centre-backs. And then Maitland-Niles was a right wing-back.
Yeah.
But then Snatch was kind of like high up on the left, but... Or higher up than you'd expect the wing back to be, but not quite as high up as you'd expect when Aubameyang was doing that job.
Yeah.
So it was. I'm not saying it was wrong. This is not a criticism.
Yeah,
but it wasn't a natural out and out what you'd expect the normal back five to be.
Mm-hmm. Nah. Okay. So that's. Well, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't know how he's thinking at the end of the game. I haven't seen an Emery press conference on that yet. I know I'm a bit slack, but I just imagine he'd say it was a good game. Blah blah blah. Okay, mate, that's about us. We're going to wrap it up. So just a quick shout out to our Patreon listeners. We've got getting a few up there now, so thank you very much to you guys, and we'll keep rolling that content out for you guys in bonus content and things. We'll also we won't have time this week, but usually Tony, Schwinn and I talk and dribble shit after every podcast for about half an hour or so. So what I'll do is I'll actually throw that whole podcast up as well. I'll start recording them and throw them up, and you can just see what we dribble about. And that's only for Patreon listeners only, because you are all excellent people. Not saying that you normal people aren't, but the Patreon listeners are great because they actually support us in what we do. So, and we thank you very much for that. So, okay, mate, that's about it for you. Anything else?
Yep.
Good. Okay, thank you. Everybody, get your tips in to me. Try and get them in early, eh? Don't leave it to the last game, the Liverpool game. So get them tips in to me at Gunatez. Happy days, good luck, and thank you. Good night. See you, mate.
See you later.